Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith to break down the Bengals Week 14 overtime loss to the San Francisco 49ers. It was a thriller here at Paul Brown Stadium that didn't end in the Bengals' favor, but they were able to rally from a 20-6 deficit to put them back in this game and give themselves a chance to win. Ultimately, the 49ers had the ball last in overtime, and Joe Burrow never got to touch the ball again. But his comeback in terms of how he got the Bengals back into the game with less than 3 minutes to play was a special performance by Joe Burrow and T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase on the offense. Defensively, it was a struggle at times, but overall, I thought that the Bengals defense made enough adjustments and played well enough to win this game for the Bengals. Do you agree with that, Charlie?
The defense is the part of the Bengals game that's not going to get the praise that it deserves from this game. Playing without Trey Hendrickson, playing without Logan Wilson, playing without Chidobe Awuzie for most of the fourth quarter and overtime as well. Looking at how you want to allocate points, George Kittle was responsible for 13 of those, and like a basketball player, you'll almost let him, like that's almost his average, it feels like, with how good of a playmaker he is down the field. Special teams cost the Bengals 10 points. Yeah. And then there are just three more points there to make up for the Chargers, or for the 49ers 26 on the game. The 49ers offense and the dynamic nature of Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't the reason the Bengals lost. The defense executed as often or more often than you would expect them to, but there was too much else that went wrong for the Bengals.
Yeah, so let's hit on special teams first, since you just brought up the points. Darius Phillips, a tough day for Darius Phillips. Two muffed points, as you said, Charlie, that resulted in 10 points. The first muffed punt only resulted in a field goal for the 49ers, but then this was the one that was the absolute dagger for the Bengals, was right before halftime, the Bengals defense came up with a stop to potentially give this team some momentum going into halftime, knowing the Bengals offense was going to get the ball back first. Not only did Darius Phillips muff the punt to give the 49ers a chance to get back on the field and score points before the half is over, then Von Bell has the bad taunting penalty that basically it just gave the 49ers a really easy opportunity. And anytime you give Jimmy Garoppolo more opportunities to find George Kittle, he's going to. So the second muffed punt by Phillips really was an issue for the Bengals. They were able to overcome it, but of course, by Joe Burrow's play in the second half. But the Bengals have an issue at punt returner. I know they put Tyler Boyd back there, but it will be interesting to see what Zach Taylor and Darren Simmons decide to do in terms of where are they going to go? Are they going to stick with Boyd? Because, you know, there's some reluctancy to do that with your star players, to put them in more opportunities to potentially get hurt. But where do they go from here, Charlie, with the punt return situation? Because you don't think about it until it comes up in games like this, where now this is all you can talk about.
So I want to zoom all the way out. Why was Darius Phillips returning punts for the Bengals today? Like the existential question almost. You can kind of dig it back to like August 2020 as a starting point. The expectation heading into last season was that he'd compete with Alex Erickson for the punt return job. When Trey Waynes went down, Phillips, they had to abandon that plan. Darius Phillips stopped returning punts, had to focus and prepare on being the starting corner outside, which he was when he was healthy last season. And then 1 year later, heading into training camp this year, obviously the Bengals added Awuzie and Hilton and Apple and a ton of depth in the secondary, Allen. So after a break for so long and after a long stretch of a career where Darius wasn't focused on being a punt returner, where that wasn't a huge part of his role and responsibility, they threw that upon him because this year they didn't sign a punt returner except for Trent Taylor, who didn't make the team. They didn't add any options. That wasn't an area of the team that they addressed at all during the offseason. Darius Phillips kind of backed into the job because Trent Irwin wasn't active to start, didn't make the team originally, and then wasn't active to start the season. And now it's Irwin and Phillips bouncing back and forth depending on what they need to fill out the rest of the roster for special teams and snaps purposes. Punt returner was never a priority, and today you saw the downside of that.
Who would you feel the most comfortable with from the Bengals' standpoint going forward as a punt returner?
Yeah, I've been saying this all season. I was a believer that the Bengals should have traded for a punt return. I had a couple in mind there at the trade deadline, because with the Bengals defense, as consistent as it is as creating stops, it was such an opportunity mm-hmm. to add. Phillips was right in the bottom at the trade deadline in terms of efficiency in his punt returns. At this point, it would take some roster moves, but you know, we'll see if any of these injured Bengals players need to go on IR. But I would strongly consider opening up a roster spot for Trent Taylor. He was the guy they added. He didn't make the team. He wasn't a huge high priority ad. They brought him into rookie minicamp, but he is the only consistent proven punt returner that the Bengals have on the roster. And I think that they can't afford to do anything else but to make a move and call Taylor up.
Yeah. And well, knowing what we know about Darren Simmons, though, is that he has a very high attention to detail in terms of, I'm sure he's going to be up late tonight trying to figure out how to get this situation better for his team moving forward. Because like I said, nobody ever talks about special teams until it comes up in games where it can ultimately decide games. And it did today. It played a huge factor in something you probably weren't thinking of going in with all the matchups all over the field. I don't think anybody was saying, yeah, special teams is really going to play a factor in this game. But it's December, and this is what football is. You never know. And it's true when they say all three phases plays a role in a final outcome, and that was certainly the case for the Bengals. All right, so now let's switch to the offensive side of the ball. 6 points, again, going into the half. The Bengals were down 20 to six, and the offense just couldn't get rolling in the end zone. And it wasn't from a lack of attempts. The Jamar Chase basically said after the game today, he thought that his big explosive play that would have basically gave the whole team a jolt of confidence that didn't count. He thought it should have been a catch. He said, my hands were right under it. So take away that play. But the Bengals offense not able to establish any consistent identity in the first half. They tried to run the ball. That wasn't working. They did hit Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins a couple of times in the first half. But there wasn't a drive where the Bengals looked just like calculated and precise. Then second half, this is, Charlie, what I want to talk to you about. Joe Burrow said, we've been a second half team all year long. We figure things out at halftime and basically change what we're doing. That's going to end up, I think, being an issue for them moving forward. Yes, you think, okay, halftime adjustments are important, but you can't continue to basically sleepwalk your way through a first half of an NFL game.
So I like to look at the individual moments. Like, what, when we say they start slow, what do we mean and what's happening? And I think that today were the most obvious examples of the Bengals starting slow. A Jamar Chase drop where it was literally the mistake he struggled with the most at training camp. The angles that he takes with his hands, he fixed that. But today on that one catch, the focus wasn't there from the start. Then a false start by T. Higgins. That can't happen. In the red zone later in the game, there was that play where the 49ers basically had a kind of a twist pass rush. It was only four or five guys rushing the quarterback, but it forced Joe Burrow to take a sack in the red zone. And then on top of that, a conservative play call by Taylor on third down. They just called a screen to Piron and called it a day. It was an overall mix. It was a mix of Chase going back to something that is becoming more of a concern with the drops. Mm-hmm. It was a mix of attention to detail on that Higgins false start. It was a mix of play calling, the screen, and also the fourth down conversion that was on one of those series as well. It was a number of different factors, throwing the pass protection against a soft rush there as well. A lot of very small details that the Bengals just need to have cleaned up at this part of the year.
Yeah, so let's talk about Jamar Chase a little bit. He leads the league in drops, and I know he obviously went for over 1,000 yards. Anytime a rookie does that is awesome. Jamar Chase has been a very good player. As Joe Burrow said, one of the best players in the NFL this season. So not trying to pile on, but you're right. The drops are a concern, and they can try and gloss over it as much as they want, but his drops, they just come at very... I was writing something about this week. They just come at very inopportune times where it's like those could have really been game-changing plays had he just caught the ball. And obviously, you're probably saying, well, there's never a good time for a drop. But like, doesn't it just seem like some of his drops are just like, man, those are plays that really could have been momentum or game-changing plays for the Bengals. But there's not like he can do a whole lot during the season. He can get on the jugs machine, do more of tennis balls with his coach. But at this point, you got four games to play. You just got to hope that he can sharpen it a little bit to get them through these next four games and really play his best football, right?
Yeah, Ja'Marr Chase has bad drops. There's no doubt about that. But I think that if I were divvying up blame, I would put a lot more of it on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. Think of what the 49ers were doing. And think of, in all honesty, it wasn't the same family tree as the type of defense that has given the Bengals a ton of trouble this season. Think the Bears, think the Jets, think mm-hmm. the Browns. But it was like, at the end of the day, it looked kind of similar. Again, a soft rush of four or five guys dropping back six or seven in coverage. Today was probably the Bengals' worst game against a four or five man rush. How many plays that sack on Burrow at the end of on their last drive of overtime? That sack in the first half. It takes away opportunities for shot plays when you can't protect a soft rush, and for an offensive line that, you know, this is their five, this is who they're going with. That's still making mental mistakes and not picking up, not handing off assignments at this part of the year. That's extremely concerning. And honestly, it's what's holding back the offense the most. You know, the offensive line was a big reason the run game wasn't able to be explosive and powerful. And then on those crucial third downs where Burrow took sacks, even that fourth down on that crazy play to Chase, that was a soft rush where Burrow was running for his life and it was all on him because the pocket exploded. The offensive line didn't do enough to win the game.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back and look at, of the six sacks the 49ers had, how many of them came on third down, because it felt like Burrow was sacked on third down almost all of the times. It felt like Nick Bosa was in his lap almost the entire game.
Wait, but just real quick on that. That's part of the reason, too, I would guess why they were running the ball so much.
Yeah.
Like, two reasons I think they stuck with the run. First, because it was like the Las Vegas Raiders approach. That was the we'll break the dam game. They were hoping they would break the dam. And two, they were seeing the results that against a four-man rush, they weren't at the level they needed to be at. So they hoped that the run game would find a rhythm at some point to help them get there. It didn't, and they didn't adjust soon enough.
Yep. And so before we switch to defense, let's talk about the overtime period, because that's probably going to get a lot of attention. There's a lot of questions about the play calling. It is very easy to say Zach Taylor should have kept riding Joe Burrow's hot hand. I think we can all sit back and play Monday morning quarterback. But here was the sequence of events in overtime. The Bengals get the ball to start. Burrow finds T. Higgins, moves them down the field 26 yards. They go for a mix and run, no gain. Then Burrow passes and finds Uzama for a 23-yard gain. So Burrow's having success in the air in overtime against this 49ers defense that honestly looked tired, and they were on their like fourth string cornerbacks at one point today. Then after the Uzama catch, Zach Taylor calls a first down run, a mix in 4 yards, then another run on second down, 3 yards. They get themselves in a third and three on the 19-yard line. Joe Burrow sacked on third down for 4 yards, and they have to kick a field goal. Would you have rather Zach Taylor called more passing plays in that sequence?
My biggest concern on that series was what happened on third down when they did pass the ball. They lost a free runner. Mm-hmm. It was, I believe, a rare kind of freestyle blitz from the 49ers. I believe it was one of the guys in their secondary who came up the middle. They hadn't done that much all game, but they still didn't have a heavy rush. And the fact that the Bengals weren't ready to pick that up. I mean, they'd seen styles of defenses like this. This is the Baltimore-Jacksonville style of defense. And as well as Burrow played in those games, the you can't zero me games, that gives a lot of responsibility on the offensive line too. Those were at the time statement results for them, but by not allowing that breakdown consistently against a zero style blitz. And when the delayed blitz from the 49ers got to Burrow today again, that can't happen. And that's the play that defined the drive more than anything.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's way more that goes into it than just criticizing play calling in that scenario. But Zach Taylor did say following the game, he wishes that's probably one he's going to stay up at night thinking about. And that's every play caller, right? When something doesn't go right, you overthink it at night. But he did say, in hindsight, probably would have liked to give Joe Burrow more opportunities considering he was hot. Joe Burrow then was asked that question, and he said, I'm just there to execute any play. No matter what play it is, we should execute it. Didn't want to, you know, call out his coach or anything like that. And look, Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor have an open line of communication. And I think that there's going to be a lot made of this, but at the end of the day, I think you're right, Charlie. They didn't execute when they did give their quarterback the ball, and they gave him the ball on third down and they weren't able to execute. So while you can call out the play calling, it was a third down pass. So they did put it in Burrow's hands.
So first of all, like I didn't answer your earlier question. Yes, they should have thrown the ball more consistently, because I believe there are ways, even against two high looks, the Bengals can be consistent in the pass game. And that's my overall question with this game. And I guess you could put the Bears game in the same camp. Like, wasn't the whole second half of Burrow's 2020 season a time where there was no Joe Mixon, but the offense found this incredible rhythm first against the Colts? Against the Titans is a game that obviously stands out. Against the Browns was maybe Burrow's best game of the season. For the first couple quarters against Washington, Burrow is playing at a really efficient level. Those teams didn't have a run game, and based off my memory, teams were sold out against the pass because the Bengals just weren't beating teams with the run at all at that point of the year. So what's different now? And this is genuinely a question, that when you need to be a team that needs to be pass first against pass oriented defenses, why don't they have that answer now with a better core of receivers, with a healthy Joe Mixon, with more productive tight ends, and a more stable compared to last season offensive line? Like, I don't have the answer for that question right now, but that's the lingering thing sticking in my craw from this game, because the Bengals went with the math, ran the ball, because they didn't have, they thought that was the more important thing to do, but they should have had that opportunity in their back pocket to draw back on, to find opportunities for the passing game and make that adjustment to a 2020 style offense. Mm-hmm.
Well, we could talk more about that, and we'll see how it all plays out for the Bengals offense for the next four games, to see whether they lean on the pass more or if they go back to running the ball. Don't know. That's, I think, a big reason why the Bengals are sitting at 7-6 on offense. I don't know what their consistent identity is. I know they have a lot of talent. Joe Burrow is definitely capable of putting this team in situations for them to win games in critical moments, but they've got to be able to consistently establish some identity, whether it's passing plays or running plays, and they haven't been able to do that. So let's talk a little bit about the defense before we get out of here. I want to start on the back side of this. Jesse Bates could have closed this game out for the Bengals and made the play of his season. It has not been a good year for Jesse Bates in terms of what we've seen from him in years past. But man, he had a chance to pick Garoppolo off and take that back to the house, and he just missed the opportunity.
This was, so I mean, that last drive is a metaphor for the Bengals season, because at that point, Wilson was out, obviously he missed the whole game. Shadobi Awuzie was out on that drive, and Trey Hendrickson missed most of the game with the back injury. It was a moment where, you know, those are arguably have been their most three productive players this season. It's almost looking at the supporting cast, but it's funny because that's not what you associate Jesse Bates as at all. You were looking for the playmaker on that last drive in particular. Zach Taylor always says, like, those are the moments that eluded the Bengals last season. They feel like they have added depth and talent and upside to that unit to make the kind of game-ending defensive play that, again, the Bengals didn't have in 2020 at all this season. Made at a really high level against the Vikings. They made plays against the Jaguars. They made a lot of those this season. They didn't get that today. And you win games because, like I tweeted this at one point, Jermaine Pratt and BJ Hills are out there making plays. But at the end of the day, you need your Jesse Bateses and your Eli Apples at this point and making plays as well, because those are the players you need to be relying on.
You don't get too many opportunities like that to get your hands on a ball that's essentially thrown right at you to close out the game. And for a player, a team captain like Jesse Bates, those are moments that you make your money on. And we're not going to talk about that, but that was certainly a missed opportunity for Jesse and the Bengals defense, who, like we talked about at the beginning of this, kept this team in the game. So a commendable performance by the Bengals defense. They've got some things to figure out against tight ends, because as you mentioned earlier this week, this stretch of tight ends that the Bengals defense is about to face doesn't get any easier, with Noah Fant coming up next week, then Mark Andrews, and then closing out the stretch against Travis Kelce, who you can argue is even better than George Kittle. So without Logan Wilson, that's also a question, but it looks like Von Bell was their main guy against tight ends today. He finished the day leading the Bengals in tackles with 10, Jesse Bates right behind him with 9. But how do you think the Bengals defense can adjust to playing tight ends better?
Well, it all depends. The number one thing, so I was expecting Von Bell to get most of the snaps today against tight ends, but the second biggest The second most used thing I was expecting was Chidobe Awuzie, because he got one-on-one snaps against Mark Andrews, against TJ Hawkinson, and was 4-0, quote-unquote, in his matchups against tight ends when he was targeted this season. Potentially, that was impacted by Chidobe Awuzie dealing with the foot injury. Obviously, as I mentioned, he missed the end of the game there, maybe limiting how much he had to do, especially because he barely practiced this week. So that would have been my answer. Maybe now you turn to either more Eli Apple or more Trey Flowers, but definitely a heavy dose of Von Bell, because I think he's the best, most physical and athletic option you have at that right now.
Yeah, they got to figure something out, because like I said, doesn't get any easier. Well, that's it for Charlie and I for tonight's episode. We'll talk more in depth about the Bengals playoff picture, what this loss means, how does everything stack up when we talk about the Broncos and then upcoming episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. But thanks for tuning in.